Warning, the hosts of this program are not broadcast professionals. They have no idea what they're doing. They are bad at this. One of them uses swear words. A lot. All complaints about this show are correct. You have been warned. This is your last chance to download a real podcast. Okay, you asked for it. Here are Dave Brown and Iron Mike Irons. This is Entitled Town.
All right. Thank you, Al. Thank you. I'm here with Iron Mike Irons. Thanks once again to the Entitled Town Orchestra and to Al, who Al was going to take. He took a big job. It was a big job in a big city. Talking all about national media and other teams and all kinds of stuff, like basically the whole league, all the leagues, really. And but Al has since left that position. It didn't go well. They said all he talked about was the Patriots and the Boston media the whole time. And so Al, he never really left us, but he's back. And he before the show, he announced, he walked in and said, "Guys, I am back, and I'm committed. And I have a big announcement coming," and then he did his announce and left. And but we're glad to have him. I think it all played out pretty well. Iron Mike, how are you doing?
Things are well, Dave. Al is back, and I didn't miss him.
Well, that's good. Did you watch the Super Bowl?
I did watch the Super Bowl.
We're a little late discussing the Super Bowl. I went on vacation during the Super Bowl, and
80 days around the world with Dave Brown.
Yeah. Well, just to Mexico, but it was enough of a thing where it was like when I got back, I was like, it was a long trip, so I was like, go ahead and weep. I was too tired to do a show, and I think, you know, a lot of times you hear a show and the people come on and they say, "We got a great show for you today," and I'm feeling like this is not going to be a great show. I think this could be one of our worst. Is that too optimistic?
Well, the disclaimer in the opening is that we're bad at this. We're both a little bit under the weather. We're playing hurt. Right. However, I have to admit that I perked up just before we're recording. We're recording on Wednesday night. Ben Volen is being hailed by some of his peers as a visionary in breaking the news that Nick Caserio is staying with the Patriots.
Well, hold on. Before we get into that big scoop,
correct,
let me just ask quickly, what did you think of the Super Bowl?
I wanted the 49ers to win. The Chiefs played fast break basketball. They came back and won. The 49ers shot themselves in their foot. They were going to get one. They got one. Congratulations. You're only five behind the Patriots.
Watching it in Mexico and not understanding Spanish, despite 3 years of high school Spanish, was nice for me because I was able to pretty much zone out and watch the game as if I were at the game. And it was really a nice experience. With no announcers really guiding me through what was going on and the situations. And, you know, I got to focus on the game in a way that I don't usually when I watch on television. So that was nice. And although honestly, I guess I kind of tune out. I used to tune out announcers. Probably from watching out of town games and bars and stuff, but I think the last couple of years, like when I watch road games and I watch them at home, fans start talking about the announcers and I start paying attention to like Dan Fouts and realizing that guy is just obsessed with intentional grounding and it eats away at you. So it was nice for me to get back to that experience of like kind of tuning out the announcers, watching the game. I thought it was a great game. I don't understand why Kyle Shanahan doesn't run on second down. I also thought the end of the first half was a situation that basically proved it was the same situation as the end of the Patriots when they played Miami in week 17, where the opponent, in this case, Kansas City, was playing defense in with less than 2 minutes left, had three timeouts. And so you're just trying to advance the ball enough where you can use your own three timeouts to try to create enough plays for you to score. And then San Francisco hit the big pass to Kittle, but there was a penalty that wiped it out. And then after the game, people criticized Shanahan for not being aggressive enough. So makes sense of that. But they had it. They had it right there. They had the play. They gained the yards they needed. And then Kittle got called for pass interference because he's not Travis Kelce, I think. Some people pointed out to me that it was, in fact, a violation of the rule as written, but I thought it was a pretty cheap call.
It was a cheap call. There's no doubt about it.
Because there's so many.
Rob Gronkowski, Kittle is now he's not Gronkowski, but he's going to get flagged for stuff like that.
The neighborhood Gronk watch?
Yeah.
So I thought that was a really interesting situation, but I did want to criticize Shanahan for the end of the game. Run on second down. What are you doing? Like, you just got – they got 5 yards on first down. This is like that drive with about 4 or 5 minutes left where they're now – their lead is evaporating. They're now down three. Or they're now up three, I should say. And, like, all you have to do is get first downs. That's – you have to run clock and move the ball and
– And that's who they are. They're a power running team, ball control. Yes.
And they've done it all night. And the benefit of running all night is that you wear down – the opposing line.
Yeah, the cumulative effect of running the ball, just sledgehammering it time and again and time and again and time and again, is the benefit of running the ball and getting nothing or a yard in the first quarter.
And like, they just got 5 yards on first down. Go run the ball. Get a yard or two. Get three. Get a first down if possible. But like, set up a more manageable conversion. And you know what? Second and five isn't unmanageable. But set up a more manageable conversion. Leave open the possibility that you might run on third down. And
yeah, when you have to defend both the run and the pass on third down, if the whole playbook's open, forget about it. It's much more difficult to defend, particularly for a Chiefs team who isn't dominant defensively.
And I've heard people say, well, they got the matchup they wanted. They got Kittle on, the guy who, he just joined the team, the edge rusher,
Suggs.
Yes, they got Kittle on Suggs, and they said, okay, that's a great matchup. But the Chiefs line blew up their line, and you've just put Jimmy in Jimmy's in a position where he has to rush. There are so many things that can go wrong there. Just run the ball, take the time off the clock, get a yard or two, if anything, and then now, like you said, you've got the option to run, you get the option to pass. Anyway, that bothered me, but we're moving on. The 2019 football season is in the books, and we have some scoops, some big scoops that we could talk about. And first, I want to talk about your big scoop.
Well, what Dave's talking about is I was told about 3 weeks ago, a couple weeks ago now, that Greg Bedard is indeed no longer with the Las Vegas Review-Journal as their lead NFL writer.
That was last week.
It was last week. Yeah, time. I'm living in a vacuum here. But I got to back up and give a little bit. I kind of fell out of for my own sanity, I stopped really monitoring Bedard's daily briefing. And I was getting some stuff from people here and there saying, how can he serve his subscribers, his ever-dwindling number of subscribers, and be the national NFL writer for the Las Vegas Journal Review? Well, a couple of Twitter followers, the great at Buckner's Legs, his Twitter name is BSJ Subscriber Tracker. Excuse me, Subscriber Tracker.
Subscriber Tracker?
Yes.
In Did English. I get out in here?
Did yeah. No, please don't. Along with Fetzer Valves, they put on Twitter that Bedard is no longer in the directory of the LVRJ. So Bedard posted his last column on Sunday, January 12th. He had a regular Sunday NFL notes column. The next Sunday, the 19th, it was not there. However, no column since. Those gentlemen both posted their scoop on the 4th of February. And both, I posted it to the bjbsjournal.com along with the BJBS Journal account, my buddy Deedsy. 24 hours later, Bedard still had the Las Vegas Review Journal in his profile. They tweet it. We put it on the website. The next day, gone. There's actually nothing on Bedard's Twitter profile anymore relating to the Las Vegas Review-Journal, despite him still having his other former employers.
Right, so, disappeared overnight.
Just poof.
And you reached out to somebody you know.
I reached out to somebody I know in Vegas media, and they gave me a lead on it. And dawn broke on Marblehead. I picked up my cell phone and I called the Las Vegas Review Journal. I got the newsroom. I asked them if Greg Bedard was still employed there, and they told me flatly, no. I said, can you elaborate? And they said they couldn't elaborate. And I said, okay, thank you. And I went with it. I had two people. I had the source itself, the newspaper, along with another source from Vegas, in Vegas media. And the news was reported, and it's gone now. It's like, as you noted, it's into the ether. It's like it never existed. But he's trumpeting himself that he's back, baby, and he's better than ever. Well, it's hard to be worse. But it's, again, cullening, disingenuous. No answers. Where's the accountability? We're still waiting for his explanation for Mike Loiko's homophobic and racist tweets. He lives in, what's the color of the sky in his world? I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bizarre situation. I don't understand. There's clearly more to this story. And hopefully someday we'll find out what that is. But until then, I'm good closing the book on Greg for a while. I feel like we were so good at not talking about Greg that we can get back to it.
Yeah, and let's close the
our rule of never talking about him. We were so until we broke it, we were really good at it. And now,
it's been nothing but him and Mittens since.
I know. Okay. So, our good friend of the podcast, Ben Volen, who you vouched for, he is
false.
He had a big story today. You want to tell us about it? What did Ben uncover?
Well, Mittens losing Dullard Volen reported today that Nick Caserio is staying with the Patriots. I did not click on the Volen link. I refused to click on the Volen link, but evidently he is staying. Mike Reese gave Volen credit as being first, friend of the podcast. Evan Lazar also gave Volen credit for being first, which I find, you know, Volen flipped the coin today and it landed on heads when in trying to give his takes, because he's been reporting for a long, long time, including as recently as February 1st, that Caserio was gone. What? And that the Texans were still in auction, among others.
Is that true?
Yes. February 1st, Volen tweeted that in his Sunday Notes column.
Oh, my God. He said on February 1st?
February 1st. It's in my Twitter feed.
Oh, my God. I was out of the country. That is... What?
And it's been... It's not... let's be fair here. It's not just Volen. The entire Boston media has been trolling for clicks since after last year's Super Bowl and the incident with Jack Easterby last summer. Everybody has been trying to troll for clicks by using Caserio as a bell cow for clicks and trying to create hysteria. And now, as usual, nothing comes of it. He's staying. There's never been any there. There was no smoke. There's no fire.
It's the standard everything is falling apart type story.
And it's the same thing every year with Brady. We had it last year after the Super Bowl with Brady, and we're smack deep in the balls deep in the middle of it now, and it's already tiring.
I like that you corrected yourself to insert offensive language, as if
there goes my New Year's resolution.
As if most people do the opposite, but
no, it's really it's tiresome. Well, it's February 12th, and it's already this Brady stuff is played out as the Easterby Caserio stuff was played out last year. They were wrong again, and now they're trying to paint it as though they have this breaking news scoop when they've been reporting the opposite for almost a full calendar year.
I don't know if we actually talked about this in one of our early episodes, because I talked about it a lot on another podcast, but that was the story where Ben put it out, and it was like the headline said the real story in the Caserio situation, and they used those words in the headline, the real story.
That was a June of 19 story, correct?
Yep, June 19th, 2019. And I just tweeted it out from the earlier we tweeted, actually Al tweeted it out because Al does the tweets for Entitled Town, but we tweeted out that Volan tweet because he
originally, well, I've got it here. Actually, I've got it right here.
Got it. You've got it. Where is
June 17th, 2019. Ben Volan on football. The real story in the Patriots squabble with the Texans. Nick Caserio wants out.
Right. So he said the real story. Okay. And then the next day, everyone's like, what is going on? This is the real story. And Ben went on a radio station in Texas and said that it was just his opinion. And people were like, oh, this isn't a report, because he doesn't cite to a source in his On Football column in regards to the information. So it's like, okay, if you're not citing to a source, are you just kind of extrapolating here? Are you analyzing the situation? And that's your conclusion. And there were a number of other plausible explanations for why this might have gone down the way it went down, where Caserio supposedly, the Patriots asked for permission, Houston asked for permission to speak with the Patriots, and the Patriots said no, and then came up with some unexplained contract language that it enabled them to deny that permission, and that's a fascinating issue that we can get into another time.
And it was painted to be nefarious, as right. always.
And it was like, basically, Ben's conclusion was that Caserio wants out. And so then it's like, well, did that come from a source? Or is that just your conclusion? And so, like, your opinion. And he goes on the Houston station and says it's his opinion. He then goes on WEEI and says it was a report. And then he got it from sources. But kind of, like, well, I cover the team and I have sources and this is an informed opinion. And so somehow a reporter wrote a story that people did not understand whether it was an opinion or a news report. And then 2 days later, after the author of the story had spoken on the matter twice, people were less clear on whether it was news or opinion.
That so someone who works with words for a living actually made it more confusing when trying to clarify it.
Yes, and that is a complete disaster. That is an absolute failure for a news organization that is trying to inform its readership. If you get to day three of the story and people are somehow less informed than when they started and still don't know how to classify what they're reading as news or opinion, that is, objectively speaking, a complete disaster.
It's also the top play in the Globe playbook, not just with Volan. He's the symbol, part and parcel of what they now stand for.
We now know that it was also wrong as either an opinion or a news report, that if Caserio wanted out so bad, why is he signing an extension for multiple seasons? That's not the way out. He could have been gone. He could have left already. You know, and people will say, well, you know, he wanted to work in Texas, and Houston's have already kind of filled that job. They've given it to Bill O'Brien. Well, you know, okay, but if he really wants out of New England, he doesn't have to be here.
Volan tweeted on February 2nd, Houston's still an option for Nick Caserio. This was after O'Brien was named the general manager of the Texans.
You know, it's like we talk about this. We talk about this. Sort of how these stories come to be and where perhaps information, I'm not saying Ben, like for him to say that information probably came from somewhere, but did you put in the time to find out whether that's true? Did you cross check that with somebody in Houston? Because that sounds an awful lot like posturing for somebody who just signed a contract, who was in the midst of possibly discussing that contract. So, you know, I think I've been thinking about this a lot because we talked about this in the context of Brian Murphy and how the news can be affected by people who have a stake, who are informed sources, giving out small pieces of information to that might not necessarily even be true.
Brian Murphy, the NFL agent who's friends with Bedard.
Right. Giving out that information to, you know, affect their side of, or to enhance their bargaining position, or to help somebody get, to help somebody look better going into the draft or into free agency and things like that. And it is to take these people at their word. And I'm not saying that they're misinforming so much, but they're probably giving like low context pieces of information to keep people on the hook and just feed this story that might not be realistic and might not be true.
But that's misinforming. That's exactly what misinforming is. If he's a journalist, he's not doing his job. He can't differentiate at one given time whether it's a report, whether it's his opinion, or it's an informed opinion.
But I'm saying that when it's coming from, and not, this isn't necessarily specifically in this case, but when it comes from an agent and it is meant to shape public opinion, I mean, maybe there is a plausible scenario in which Houston is still available, but it just isn't likely. Okay. It's not, or it's possible, but it's not plausible.
It was unlikely and not plausible the minute the Patriots dropped their grievance against the Texans last summer.
Right. Or like, I mean, it, maybe it's possible in the sense that there is still a football team in Houston, you know? And so
that's a low bar, and that's where we're at with the Globe. So enough about the Globe and enough about that Mittens losing dullard. The fact that he is the Globe's lead football writer and he's paraded on WEI's morning show as a football expert is absolutely laughable.
It is, and you know what? And again, it's like I come back to the standards of the profession and I use this term paper of record, and people can disagree with me. But if they want to be the paper of record, they can't miss the mark the way they do as much as they do with their football coverage. And he is a big part of that. And I can't reconcile. It comes from an institutional problem where people don't understand what they're covering. You know, the editors don't. And so the editors hire the reporters. And they're not – it's so hard to be an editor and to cover – to know every sport inside out. And that's why you go get somebody who's supposed to be an expert to do that. But it's almost like in some of these cities, you see owners who always hire the wrong coach. And it's because they don't have a good feel for which coaches and which qualities among coaches make up the best coaches.
Yeah, the Boston Globe has become the New York Knicks. And the Globe's managing editor, Pizzuti, is James Dolan in this case, and everything, the incompetence trickles down. But Ben Volen it's unbelievable. He's been around for the second part of the greatest run in the history of football, and he has demonstrated time and time again he has no idea what he's looking at, whether it's on the field or off the field.
It seems to me that the characteristics they've come to embrace are being able to generate sort of frustrating takes that are going to polarize the audience, and
what audience?
Going to press conferences and, you know, making a scene, being the tough guy, always standing up for every question is in play. The principles of like journalistic machismo that, like, you know, well, we're just asking questions.
Is he a big "I'm just asking the question" guy?
I mean,
when he's there, on the rare occasions he's made it to Foxborough to actually do his job.
I think some people overplay that. I don't think he's not there rarely. I've had other reporters say to me that he's not there as much as they'd like, but it's not his beat. You see, he's covering the NFL. I don't know. That doesn't bother me. But the idea that he is...
He knows nothing about the Patriots. He knows less about the rest of the NFL.
Like he once asked Brady, based on absolutely zero evidence, if Edelman's PEDs came from TB12. And we exist now in an environment where if you ask a question, you're not just asking a question. You're not just asking the question. You're not doing that. If you ask a question, you have now created a story. And it was a very unfair position to put Brady, and Brady walked off. Good for him. Because you have no evidence.
That's flat irresponsible.
It is irresponsible. And I understand that, like, the industry has changed a bit, and people were brought up on this idea that you're supposed to ask all the questions. But when you do it in a public forum, you're creating a story now. You're creating takes. You're creating headlines. And all of these things collectively serve the same function as a news story, which is that they pass information along to people. And so you're really being unfair to Tom Brady, who has in no way been implicated in this situation, when you ask that question. And so, you know, he's that type of person who will just ask anything without recklessly, with no concept of how it's going to affect the reader. Like the Globe in general seems to have no, other than, I guess, getting clicks, just seems to have no discretion about how to. And you know what? And there are some people over there that I wouldn't throw under the bus, that are doing a great job, but you know, within the confines of, and when I say doing a great job, I mean, in this current media environment where they're not leveraging every situation for their own attention, and they're not unfairly putting stuff out there. And I think, you know, I don't know, I haven't read every single piece that Jim McBride has written over the last few years, but he became, I think, the Patriots beat writer in 2016, and he's done a really good job. And, you know, in a sense of, he gets his stories and he puts them out there, and he's sort of good cop on the Patriots beat, but they have to, for some reason, have a bad cop out there. And
idiot cop.
kindergarten cop.
Yeah, but putting somebody like McBride out there, it's the meme, the mem with the Simpsons, you know, at least you tried. Everything that the Globes, Jim McBride, okay, he does a workmanlike job. I can't attest to that. You vouch for him on that. Everything that they do,
I'm not here about
the high profile Globe stuff is done by Volan, and it's done by Shaughnessy.
I mean, as soon as I vouch, it's going to turn into...
Never vouch. We've established this. Never vouch. There's a reason.
I'm just saying...
We've devouched.
I'm just saying that, like, Jim does... Again, he's not trying to leverage every situation for attention. He's not, you know, he's not running wild with crazy takes all over the place. He is coloring within the lines.
Well, that's fine. And good for Jim McBride. But Dave,
not everybody who colors within the lines always uses the right color.
But Dave, the Globe exists in a bubble with no mirrors.
At least they are adhering to journalists. Like, this is what I'll say about Jim McBride. As best I can tell, I'm sure as soon as I finish the sentence, someone will pull up an example and tell me I'm wrong. But Jim adheres to understood journalistic norms that keep this thing moving forward. The Globe as a whole, for some reason, doesn't seem to be, and really it's their job in this market to mind these journalistic norms and to ensure that they continue to be upheld and be met. And because they are sort of the adult in the room in the media scene, like that's what they're supposed to be. If they don't do that, the whole thing crumbles. And I don't think that they're doing that. I think that they let, like they had this thing when about the Malcolm Butler story, where the first day of training camp, Dan Shaughnessy comes and asks Belichick about Malcolm Butler and, like, why didn't you play him in the game? And Bill doesn't want to talk about it. He's moving on, which I thought was like, I thought it was, okay, this story is 5 months old. Butler has talked about it. You know Bill's not going to say anything. So why are you here and why are you doing this? And I was like, that's not so great. Then I heard that Shaughnessy had privately asked Belichick these questions, that he had attempted to reach out to the Patriots and put those questions to Bill, and Bill had politely refused.
So it was merely performance art.
Yes. There's no
curly-haired.
You can already print what you need to print, which is that Bill won't comment. So why are you showing up in person to put that on video, So it becomes a social media topic. Like, you're not gathering information in your role as a journalist. You are creating a scene in your role as a provocateur.
And here's where social media has become a level of the field a little bit, at least, Dave, where idiots like Shaughnessy and Volan, even Tara Sullivan, are trolling their readers. We can then go at them on social media and troll them. And we're just asking the question, Dave. And these thin-skinned assholes, more often than not, they block. It's a goddamn shame that this performance art and the idiot that Volan is can't be blocked from Foxborough. It really, it's such a disingenuous mess. It's everything the Globe does with regards to the Patriots is, you know, they are a fully owned subsidiary of the Boston Red Sox, the despicable ownership and front office of the Boston Red Sox. So I guess I shouldn't be surprised.
Well, and you know, the shame here is, I mean, from June of 2019 until February of 2020, they were reporting that story incorrectly.
He's gone. He's gone across the board.
All coming apart. You know? And then
it's the first brick to fall in the Patriots dynasty.
And then, I mean, how long before the takes of, you know, maybe the Patriots should have moved on from Casario
because he can't draft. He can't draft Collar.
Yeah. The last few drafts. And then didn't somebody had a comment about Bill waving off Casario in certain circumstances, but okay. I mean, of course that's going to happen. They're never going to agree on every single player and Bill has the final say. But anyway, yeah. So that's what people will say. They'll be like, it's a nightmare that Casario could leave, right? It's like sky is falling. Oh my God, it's all going to hell. And then it's until they draft somebody and then he's terrible.
It's went through the same thing when Weiss and Cornell left. Went through the same thing when McDaniels left the first time. We went through the same thing when Bill O'Brien left. It's they seize on this minutia to try to be the first to foresee or call the dynasty ending. And it's just over and over, two goddamn
everybody
decades.
Wants credit. Everybody wants credit, like the Casario thing. It's like everybody wants credit for saying he was going to leave. And they want it 8 months before he leaves. And it's like, why can't you just wait? Why can't you just wait for a thing to happen and comment on it? You know, why can't you and report on it? Like, that's what the media is supposed to do. That's what the journalists are supposed to do. You know, gather the information and then report it. And
well, there's your error, Dave. You're assuming that journalism is happening in this case.
You don't need to be 8 months early. You just don't. It's not like the industry has tricked itself into believing that there is so much value in these like half second got the story first revelations, and you've got people fighting on Twitter over who had it first, and then everybody stepping all over themselves to be like somebody else had it first, and it's like, okay, first of all, if you confirm the information yourself, I don't care if you give credit to the other person. Like, it in a way, it would be more helpful to the audience to know that, like, if you and I worked on a story separately and I came to the same piece of information as you, it would be helpful for the audience to hear that. But if you go first and then I go, well, I confirmed what Ironhead learned, then that's just more or less checking with the same person you did, maybe. And so that doesn't really add any value to it. It's just, okay, it's good for you because...
Yeah, it's schematics and backslapping, navel-gazing. That's all that is.
Right. It's just, I don't know. This is one of those things. It's like everybody's obsessed with being first and getting this credit, and I think that the value is illusory. I don't think
it's... To wit, trampolining off Casario here, Christian Fourier, he of Chara was Dunsky in the Stanley Cup Finals, wrong, is now going all in on Brady being gone. It's like, we still have a goddamn month to go.
Well, did you see
Brady doesn't know what the hell he's doing yet.
Did you see what another former Patriots tight end did? Jermaine Wiggins.
I think you better clarify. Oh, Wiggins? Oh, God.
Wiggins is 100% all in that Brady's going to stay.
It's almost as if they really don't know what the hell is going on.
Well, I like that he did it, though. I like that. I mean, I like that he
chips to the center of the table, Wiggy.
And I don't know. Here's why I like it, because it demonstrates the value of Fourier's proclamation. Because here's another guy who fits the exact same description. Local media personality who used to play tight end for the Patriots, who has probably the same, like the same ability to gain that information as Fourier does, and has reached a complete opposite conclusion. It tells you that there's a lot that's still in play. But
anyone ask Benjamin Watson?
Well, yeah, let's find out what
anyone drop the question to Ben Watson.
Let's find out what Ben Watson has to say.
Ben Watson actually played with him in the last 2 months.
True. Okay, let me ask you this. So, I don't follow baseball as closely as I do the football. It's hard enough to be up on everything and to feel like, let me say this, like, I can tell when the people who are commentating are just about as informed on the situation as I am in this market. And when, especially in regards to baseball, because I have a very, I have a rough idea of what's going on, but I don't feel close to the situation. I don't monitor. I don't stay on top of these things. So when I hear people, there are times when I'll hear people comment on like the Mookie situation, and I'm like, you know exactly as much as I do. Like this is one of the thoughts that would have occurred to me, and I'm not remotely close to this. I don't follow it. So I'm reluctant to put myself in that position to give bad takes, because I don't.
No bad takes are my job.
I know that I'm lacking information, but for the sake of this podcast, and to make all of this rambling I just did add up to something, you wanted to talk about the Mookie Betts situation, this big trade to the Dodgers, and how that was portrayed. And so I guess I'm just going to kind of follow along here while you talk about it. So,
well, I think in some ways you're the perfect, you can look at it without being tainted by the takes on this stuff and kind of look
at it. I have no take. Yeah, I have no real take.
Well, you can maybe listen to my take and call bullshit on what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I got a fresh set of eyes here.
Right. So this Betts stuff, Betts vis-a-vis the Globe stuff has really, 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 it's, to me, I feel like, am I taking crazy pills here? So first of all, the Sox stuff, the Sox Spygate stuff, the day the Sox Spygate stuff broke, the Globe put all hands on deck regarding the Aaron Hernandez documentary. Laughable. Transparent. Now the Betts trade, it has the added, the whole Betts thing went down. It not only distracts momentarily from the Sox Spygate stuff, it's unbelievable that the Globe continues to go to, they are, the Red Sox have a PR firm disguised as a semi-legitimate media outlets in Nesson and the Globe. They were stumping for the first trade until the public reaction from non-Globe outlets and the fans became so bad. And that's, at least that's how I feel. It's been discussed on social media as well, where the Red Sox actually pulled out of the deal with the Twins, with the relief pitcher.
Gretterol,
yeah. It sounds like a performance-enhancing substance. 101-mile-an-hour flamethrower. They void that deal, throw Bloom under the bus on this. Bloom was brought in with a mandate. You don't hire the second in charge from the Tampa Bay Rays to bring him in with a huge payroll. You brought Dave Dombrowski in with a mandate to do that. You brought in Bloom with a mandate to cut payroll and increase profit and make the best out of this Betts trade. The Betts trade distracted from Spygate. The Globe had their back on Sox Spygate. The Globe had their back on the Betts trade, and the Globe is now championing this new revised trade where the Twins are out on the Red Sox part. The Red Sox got two extra prospects from the Dodgers. It is just mind-boggling to me that the Globe is able to get away with stuff time and again. This is we can talk about other stuff with Shirley Leung and the stuff that's discussed on the Minahan podcast. This is just a small slice. They are so compromised on everything they do. They're a marketing arm. They're a PR firm. Am I crazy?
Well, okay. So I'm trying to just sift through your thoughts here. So it sounds like to me you're saying you thought the Globe was, and again, I didn't monitor the coverage that closely, so I can't echo your opinion, but you're saying you didn't feel that they gave the issue as much attention, the trade itself, as much attention as they would the Aaron Hernandez documentary or the fake Spygate situation.
No, what I'm saying is that the Globe is a spin machine for the Red Sox no matter what they do.
Well,
the day that the Sox Spygate stuff broke, Volan and others promoted the Aaron Hernandez documentary.
Right.
And everything that's done since then not only takes the Betts trade, pushes the Sox Spygate stuff in the background. And the Sox fucked this up every way from Jump Street. The trade got leaked. They renege on a deal. Mm-hmm. The Twins get pissed off and pull out. The Red Sox make another deal. Every way, the Globe is leading. The Globe is cheerleading, giving us the best part of this. They went on one Saturday. They all went on Mass and gave a tepid thumbs down on what was going on. But it's just, it really is insulting to me. It is insulting as a sports fan, a Boston sports fan, that the Globe is doing this. And at the same time, they're shitting on the Patriots time and again.
For everything they do. Yeah.
And then here's what bothers me, Dave.
Yeah.
With the Patriots. And again, this is me speaking. This is not Dave Brown. What does Stacey James do? Stacey James is the public relations.
I love this issue.
Public relations flack for the Patriots. If the public relations for the Patriots were a football team, they'd be the Jets.
Okay, but
Dave, the Patriots get slandered and attacked by talking heads on the radio, on the television, in the newspapers, local and national media, and on Twitter. It's pathetic. What does he do?
But here's the problem, okay? I want to stick up for Stacey James here. I see people make these comments all the time. People kind of want Stacey James to be some kind of goon who goes out and rectifies all the wrongs of Boston media that are perpetrated against the Patriots. And that is not his job. It just simply isn't. And I don't think the Patriots have anybody who does that job. I don't think they want anybody to do that job. And I think if that were Stacey James' mandate, that he was supposed to be that kind of goon, I think you'd have a fair point that that's not what he's doing. But that's not Stacey James' mandate.
What the Patriots are doing, they're allowing the Globe and John Henry to dictate the terms of debate in the region. That's a dereliction of whatever duty whoever it should be. It's gross incompetence on part of Patriots.
Organizational PR. Strategy. That's not like Stacey James was supposed to come in and make sure that Felger minds his P's and Q's. So it's, I see people point out all the time that it's like, this is the and listen, Stacey James might be the right person to bring this attention to. I just don't think the Patriots as an organization are interested in any other strategy than taking the high road when people are unfair to the Patriots.
You say taking the high road. I would say roll over like Bob Kraft in Florida.
Well, you're entitled to that opinion. I think, wow, I just processed what you said.
No, it's really maddening Globe has their goddamn pom-poms on and they rubber stamp everything the Red Sox are doing. And the most successful franchise in the region's history, save for the Celtics of the 50s and 60s, get pissed on at every turn.
Yeah, but any action that they could take would just make them look like thin skins,
It doesn't have to be done from at a press conference even. There's ways to do this behind closed doors and through back channels. It's two decades.
The way to do it is to buy the Globe and Nesson.
Buy the Herald is what they should do.
But I don't think they want to be in that business. I just don't. I think that they think, I don't know. I don't think, and I understand you're upset because what happens is the Patriots are kind of used as the distraction. Hey, look what they're up to when things are going bad at Fenway. It certainly feels that way to a lot of people. All I'm saying is mention it to Stacey James all you want. It's not his fault. I think it's an organizational decision that they're just going to try to approach this with some class, because once you get down in the mud, you open yourself up to just more attacks. And I think it goes back to this, we've discussed this before, where I don't know, and we could probably put together some kind of way to figure this out, like comparing headlines and look at the language used to describe the two teams. And you could go through the Globe and probably come up with an analysis that shows whether they are consciously or unconsciously unfair to bias against the Patriots and favoring the Red Sox. I haven't done that analysis, but here's the problem. It's the old bad look syndrome. And we've talked about this before, that John Henry owning these two outlets opens them up to, or it erodes credibility. It just, you're waiting for it to kind of play out that way. So,
and it's easy to paint me as, you know, a jealous fan. And I guess you could see that that's the case. And there's probably an element of truth to that. But the fact is, it really offends me that people buy this stuff. You know, I mention quite often, it's like, I think sometimes Boston fans are getting the coverage they deserve. Disingenuous, trolling. The Adam Jones show exists for a reason. Idiots love that show. People, sheep love that show.
So can we, all right, can we just hit quickly on this Ian Rappaport thing?
Yes, please. Let's do it.
Okay. So there's been this report out that Brady's now definitely, well, I don't even want to call it a report.
Informed opinion?
No, there were like these headlines on social media and stuff this week that Brady was definitely going, and some outlets kind of aggregated it, and definitely going to free agency. And it stems from this Ian Rappaport commentary on why Bob Kraft wanted to give Brady the right to get to free agency. And I'm going to play you just a little bit of Rappaport's comments. Here's his tweet. Patriots owner Robert Kraft felt the best outcome for all parties in 2020 will come after Tom Brady tested free agency. An explanation for why he agreed to let it happen. And here's what he said on the NFL Network this week.
Genius. And I think that when we use love and compassion as our guiding principles, we can create, develop, and implement systems of change that are beneficial to all sentient beings and to the environment. Now, I've been a scoundrel in my life. I've been selfish. I've been cruel at times, hard to work with, and ungrateful. But so many of you in this room have given me a second chance. And I think that's what...
Okay, I'm sorry. That was Joaquin Phoenix's Oscar.
What the hell are you doing?
Hold on.
I was just texting you.
I'm sorry.
I want to quote Al. We're bad at this.
I just want to explain something.
Jesus.
That actually makes more sense in explaining the Bob Kraft thing than this does.
Yes. The reason that owner Robert Kraft and Tom Brady, who have worked closely on several deals in the past, there's a reason why the option was to allow Brady to test free agency, to not get franchised, to not get transition, just to have a clear path toward free agency. And from what I understand, Kraft's thinking on this was basically, if the sides came together, if Brady decided that the Patriots were his best option after testing free agency, and if Bill Belichick, who of course is making the decisions for New England, if he decides that Brady is his best option at this price, then in the end, after all of this, after going through everything, that it will mean that it's basically meant to be and that it's the best thing for all sides. Kraft wanted them to get apart, to see what's out there, and try to come together in the middle. And the hope is, if that works out for 2020, that everyone will be happy they went through the process. Well, there is a pretty good...
Okay. That makes as much sense to me as Joaquin Phoenix's Oscar speech. I have no idea what he's talking about.
Those are just words.
They're just a bunch of words, just muddled around in an order. Like, there's no definitive, I can't put a fork in any piece of that and be like, that's what he's trying to say. And I think he's trying to say something. I don't know what. And maybe it's just because I'm sick. I'm not having a great week. But
oh, no, no, no. We heard the same thing. And I've said this before. These guys, when they're asked to speak extemporaneously, they prove what morons they are. They are. They are the dictionary definition of useful moron. And Rappaport's hammering Hannibal with a clothing allowance. That's all he is. He's trying to communicate and he can't do it effectively.
Well, I mean, I'm baffled because is he trying to, so was the point of this that Kraft essentially, like the Krafts put this out there as sort of like damage control in case Tom does go and people start looking at them like, what are you doing? Like, no, it was our idea. Like, we wanted them to go to free agency. But then the explanation for why they wanted him to test the market, like, well, we felt like it's almost like we're giving him a hall pass. And, you know, if he decides he really loves us, then it was meant to be. It's like, is he saying that Bob Kraft's idea was like Tom Brady Rumspringa? Like, go out, see what's going on in the city, okay? Like the Pennsylvania Dutch, right? I'm on the correct culture here, where they have Rumspringa, which is you leave an Amish-like community and you go out into the real world and you see what's going on. And if you like it out there, then you stay. But if you don't, then you come back to the community. And
isn't that the plot of Kingpin?
No, it's not, but it's close. Yeah, I don't know. If you've ever seen that show Banshee, I think it comes up in that show. But like, what? Banshee is great, by the way. But
that's a
anyway,
vouch.
What? It's a vouch. I vouch for Banshee. But this guy, I mean, here's the problem. He's trying to explain something that is inexplicable. And they have not, whoever worked out this idea and this language, they have not, it didn't coalesce around like something that people can grab onto. So it has been taken to mean that the Patriots are definitely going to let Brady get to free agency. And I don't know that it's safe to really report it that way. I don't think that's what he's saying.
Joe Haggerty is embarrassed by Rappaport's use of wording there.
Well, that's
it's, and I'll tell you, speaking for myself, Dave, we still have about a month before free agency begins. I am going to disregard pretty much everything as it pertains to Brady and his destination until is reported as fact.
I mean, as a Giants fan, to keep hearing that Brady is an option for the Giants, I mean, I promised I would eat my hat. I promised. So now we know what's going to happen, by the way. That's how you know Brady's going to the Giants, as I said. It's absolutely not happening.
There's zero chance that's happening as long as Gettleman is still the general manager who traded up to get Jones. Zero chance, and you're not going to waste the quarterback you just drafted, his cheap years.
And development.
Correct.
Like, that's it. It's over. And I don't understand why Brady would want to go to the Giants. I mean, I know the roster.
I don't want to parse. Let's not parse Brady destinations because that's been done.
We should, and I'm just trying to illustrate one of how ridiculous it is. But of course, I told Christian Arcand.
Christian Arcand, who had him going to both New York teams.
How many jerseys have you won?
Oh God. Arcand is second seat to Adam Bonesy Jonesy. Enough said. Next.
Okay, but I'm afraid I'm gonna have to eat a hat. So
ain't happening.
Do you think we could sell out the Wilbur Theater for my hat eating?
I don't think you could sell out your kitchen.
I think I don't know. I don't have a very big kitchen. I think I could do it for a hat. You don't think people would pay to watch me eat a hat?
All right. Maybe your fellow media members. That's about it.
I don't know, dude. I think people have been pushing us for an Entitled Town meet and greet. And I think if we ate a hat, if I ate a hat,
what's the old saying? I wouldn't want to be part of a club that would have me as a member. That's how it goes for an Entitled Town meet and greet.
I don't know. I mean, it all depends on Al's schedule, I think.
So. If Al's in, I'm out. Wow. The people want Al, though.
It's tough to wrangle. It's tough. It's a tough thing to wrangle. All right.
That Rappaport thing blows my mind.
It is like, I feel like he was given a job to do where somebody, and by the way, that could come, it could be coming from the other side. It could be coming from the Brady side as sort of like, to soften the blow if Brady does go to free agency, or maybe to send a message. I mean, it's so convoluted that I'm willing to attach it to anything, and it is therefore useless because it has nothing definitive to it. But I felt like somebody gave him a piece of like a point to sell, and I don't think they gave him the right words to sell it with.
Based on how effectively it was communicated, it may have been Volan that gave him that information.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but
no, that's true. That's below the belt.
All right. So, so really, you know, that's a little taste of what's to come with, sort of the off season and team building. And I mean, I wouldn't rule out the idea that Tom Brady is signed before free agency. That's all I'm saying. And I'm sure you hope that that happens so we can get on to talking about other stupid aspects of Patriots team building.
Yes.
It will be fascinating, by the way, if he moves on. And I think that's one of the things that fuels that story, is because it becomes like all of a sudden this, for people who cover the team, it's invigorating, like, oh, all the possibilities of who their quarterback could be and how great they could be with Dak Prescott or whoever, or some Tua or whoever they might draft. And then when they actually get somebody, like, they'll probably just, you know, I could probably just be Stidham or something.
Right.
And then everyone can be disappointed and hate on it. And it's just this whole like new life to all of the takes. And so it's very invigorating. And the idea that it's possible is exciting.
Brady moving on to me is not exciting even a little bit. I will say the only, and it's very, very, very small consolation.
Oh, it's only exciting to people who write about the team regularly or talk about the team regularly. It's not, this isn't what the fans are clamoring.
Well, the only small glimmer of positivity that comes out of Brady leaving and the Patriots becoming just another franchise is that the gravy train for the assholes who think that it's about them in media, it's over for them. And the herd will be thinned.
Wow. Bold.
Was that aggressive?
That was pretty aggressive.
Good, because I meant it to be.
And I'm kind of sick, so I'm just gonna let it go. But well,
have we done a podcast, counselor?
Almost. Do we have an email?
No. I haven't looked.
Okay, so I'm trying to remember, when was our last episode published? On January 26th. So here are, whoops, whoa,
what did Al, I do? Shut up, Al.
Al, relax.
Al's drunk on the podcast. That's a first.
So since January 26th, here are some reviews that came in. This is from, once again, Ned Snark, who's our like power user in terms
one of the
reviews.
Greats.
Humbled by Iron Mike. 5 stars, evisceration part due of Almost a Human. Oh my God. Boca Light Bedard was glorious. However, the highlight for me was the shout out from Iron Mike that he follows my lame Twitter feed. My head won't fit through a door frame for a week. And then he has 5 clapping hands emojis.
Ned, thank you.
Exceptional pod. This is from Kingpin Pete. These boys know how to keep us hooked. Been following for a while and love every episode. That's 5 stars from Kingpin Pete. Thank you.
Dave, and, I told you Bedard dragging would pay.
Here's that was your original pitch for the podcast.
It was, but dragging Bedard.
Here's one, I think it says methadone for 98.5, and then the next word is kind of broken off, but I think it says sycophants. I think that's where they're going with it, but I can't read the whole headline. Methadone for 98.5 sycophants. That's my edit there. Okay. Great to have a non-biased reporter and fellow pajama-wearing fanboy like myself break down the Pats and their coverage. They are shining light on the trolls and giving fans the forum we want but don't get on the local Boston airwaves. Thank you, guys. And big ups to Al, the Boston Crab. 5 stars. And here, you want some big news?
I do.
We are back to a 5.0 rating.
Well played. Well played. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, we had dropped, but now we're back. And so we still have not broken 100 ratings yet, which I find absolutely appalling, because I know that if everyone who listened to this show gave us a rate, just any rating, we would have blown past 100 many times earlier.
That's true. And I was a little bit cavalier earlier. Please, we would welcome feedback, not only on the Twitter account at EntitledTown. You can reach us at EntitledTown@gmail.com. Tell us we suck. Tell us we're good. Tell us what needs improvement. Tell us we think we should fire Al. All feedback is welcome.
Let me tell you something, guys. We have, and by guys, I mean all the men and women in our audience, and however you identify gender-wise, but let me tell you something. You're doing a good job. You're doing a good job with the ratings. With 94 ratings. Have you ever heard of the Razor Show?
Of course.
Yeah.
Friend of the podcast, Matt Chatham and Jeff Howe.
And Nick Underhill, who we probably would have had on if we hadn't stopped having guests. But do you know how many
times...
We'll
discuss that again. We need to have another guest occasionally.
Their podcast came out not long after ours. And do you know how many ratings they have on iTunes?
I'm going to guess they have 3,000.
40.
40?
40.
With the Athletic behind them.
Yeah. So we're doing a good job, I think. And listen, this is no... We like them.
And we discussed Bedard, the unathletic.
We like them. We like their podcast. We think they're doing a great job.
I listen to that podcast.
Not necessarily a vouch, because we don't want to get in trouble. But no. But they got 40 ratings. And look, here we are with our out of nowhere, out of the ether podcasts. And we're closing in on triple digits, guys. Let's get us there. Let's get us to triple digits. This is the part of the podcast that's basically an infomercial for rating us.
So, also for Apple, evidently.
This is like Amway, but for ratings.
Yeah, it's a podcast Ponzi scheme. 90 seconds, no commercials.
But it's also my excuse to say, like, okay, friend of the podcast, Evan Lazar. He does a show with Adam Kirkjian. Four and a half stars. Do you know how many times they've been rated?
I'll go with 30.
Since 2017? So they've been around a couple years longer than we have?
How many?
21.
It's the all 22 podcasts of 21. Twitter Scout season is driving me crazy. I'm painfully close to unfollowing all the Twitter Scout wannabes with the fluid hips and all that Scout jargon. It drives me up a friggin' wall. That was aggressive.
Well, that was aggressive. And I was looking something up, so I hope you didn't say anything crazy, because I didn't hear all of it.
So now we're like the Simmons and Sal podcast. We're just waiting for the other to stop talking.
I don't understand that reference, but it sounded good to me. No, I'm trying to pull up another. I'm trying to pull up another podcast here and to see. Okay,
AOL there.
Ooh, this is interesting. The Off Day Pod, Off Day Podcast, founded in 2018. 3.5 stars. A WEEI production.
Doomed from the start, in that case.
How many ratings do you think they have?
Let's see. That's with The Hammer and Dumbo. I'm going to guess they have 25 ratings.
They have 94 ratings.
Oh, all right. So we've got them by two.
No, we have 94.
Oh, we have 94. It's tied. Okay.
Yeah.
I only work with numbers for a living. It's not like it's important. I should be able to remember them.
I'm going to go fact check myself on that one, but that sounds right to me that we have 94. And right now somebody is like, you already said this. Yes, 94. We're tied. Put us on the top, people. Let's go. We want to be the highest rated, low tier Patriots podcast that there is.
We want to be the best of the worst. Please help.
And we don't even want to be the best rated. We just want to be the most frequently rated. That's what we want. That's how people are going to find us. And I think we're talking about things that are important and help people understand the news and shape people for this current media market and this environment and so forth.
And aim low.
Go rate it. Go low, just go click a button on iTunes. Yep. You can do it. And I know the majority of you listen on iTunes. We have so many stats on you people. It's ridiculous. I don't know how to interpret all of them. Is how many there are. But anyway. All right. I think we've done a podcast.
I think we've done a podcast. And I really hope the lawyer thing works out because the salesman thing ain't working.
I want to go drink a gallon of NyQuil and go to bed. How does that sound?
That sounds like a plan. I'd also, just for the record, and this is a very small audience that gets this, but it's that we're smack in the middle of Bruins season, and I miss Matt from Framingham's Bruins tweets. Matt, sweet prince, please come back.
Is this a vouch?
I vouch for Matt in Framingham.
Yikes. Okay.
I vouch for his entertainment value.
Would you say that we're on to the offseason?
We're on to the next phase of the offseason. Don't buy the Brady stuff.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody. We look forward to seeing you next time. Bye for now.
Take care.